Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for a discussion of Kick-Ass 2 by someone who is Kick-Ass 2, Doug.
Thank you very much.
When I say you're Kick-Ass 2, it means that I'm Kick-Ass 1.
You're more Kick-Ass than I'm Kick-Ass, if that's what you mean.
I mean we Kick-Ass. You're listening to F This Movie. You can find our website at fthismovie.net. You should follow us on Twitter. We're at FThisMovie. You should like us on Facebook, facebook.com/FThisMovie. And you can email us at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com.
I like what you did there. You saved about 2 seconds by just saying at FThisMovie.
It's a thing that I'm trying. It's a new thing that I'm trying. This is the first, I think, proper podcast that we've recorded since we started doing our video shows together. If you guys haven't been watching those are also called F This Movie, so it gets a little confusing.
But I think those are called episode 1, 2, 3, etc. So
exactly.
That should help a little bit.
But if you haven't been watching those, go to fthismovie.net and you can see myself and Doug.
This would be episode, if we're labeling podcasts as episode numbers, what number podcast is this? Give me an estimate, like ballpark.
185.
185?
Yeah, something.
You've recorded over 185 hours.
That's correct.
And some podcasts have been multiple hours. In fact, your one with Heather, the horror chick,
was almost 2 hours.
Almost 2 hours. So let's say 186.
Yeah. Hours. I'm willing to say it.
Wow.
I am.
It's impressive, is what I'm saying. I'm trying to say it's impressive.
Our show on Fast Five was at least 3 hours, I think.
You cut a lot out though, because it was just us giggling.
Yeah, but that's because it was terrific.
That's right.
Listen, we have a couple things to talk about before we even get to what have you seen lately.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, did you not prepare?
I am not prepared. I'm so video-focused these days. I'm like, oh, I don't need to watch movies anymore. I'm making my own.
So there's a couple things we got to talk about because a lot has happened since the last podcast proper, because last week's show, of course, was a cuffs commentary in which I didn't really talk about anything else that's going on in the world of This Movie.
But you can make an argument that a cuffs commentary describes so much that's going on in the world.
The thing about it is its universality. Okay, so
it's timeless.
Last week I'm at the Chicago Comic Con.
Is that what it's called?
I think so. It used to be called Wizard World Chicago, but I think now they go by Chicago Comic Con because they want to sound fancier.
But is Comic Con like a registered trademark? So I'm assuming it's an umbrella term.
I believe so.
Okay, so they're part of the San Diego.
They're part of the Umbrella Corporation.
I understand.
From
Resident Evil.
And I'm at a booth looking at Star Trek toys because I'm an adult. Everyone, I'm an adult. I believe I was looking at T'Pol, so not even like a good Star Trek figure. I was looking at an Enterprise figure. Okay,
time out.
I got a Jolene Blaylock in my hand,
and a 7 of 9.
A gentleman. I wish I could find a 7 of 9.
No, I'm
that shit's hard to come
what's
by.
What's in your pants?
Oh, of course. It was an 8. It was an 8. I'm looking at the toy, and a gentleman approaches me, and he says something to the effect of, "Are you the guy from F This Movie?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Oh, I really like your podcast." He recognized me, not from the video, because I believe he wasn't aware that we were doing videos, just from like a picture we had tweeted out or something. He said, "I'm a big fan." His name is Chris Krumenauer. He runs the Collective Toys up in Wisconsin, and I just want to give a shout out to him because I didn't enjoy the Chicago Comic Con. They'd made some changes this year, and I did not have a good time, but that little interaction saved the entire experience for me. And it was the first time I'd ever been recognized from the podcast.
That's really, really neat. And so you think that he recognized you from pictures?
That's what he said, yeah.
Or is it the pinhole camera that I'm staring at right now?
So that was awesome. So
Chris.
Big shout out to Chris and the Collective Toys.
Chris, what's his last name again?
Krumenauer?
I believe you're pronouncing that correctly.
I thank you. You are the German. I did not buy the Jolene Blaylock toy. I regret it. I walked out of Comic-Con empty-handed.
By the way,
all I had was a swollen sense of pride.
I'm scanning Patrick's basement right now, and I'm like, what toy wouldn't you buy? I see 4 other T'Pols.
I'm making a little army.
A T'Pol mermaid. That made no sense, by the way. That came out mumbled.
All right. So the next day, I go to Flashback Weekend. And I have to give a big shout out to Heather Wixon, who was on the last, I guess, proper podcast we did, The State of Horror. Hello, Heather. She's from Dread Central and The Horror Chick. Follow at The Horror Chick on Twitter.
And she's from our hometown.
Yeah. And she hooked me up and kind of took me around Flashback. And it was great. I got to meet a bunch of celebrities, certainly celebrities in our world. I found myself at a cocktail reception with Kane Hodder and Meg Foster and George Romero and Tom Atkins and Nancy Loomis.
Okay,
and
a bunch of people. Who's Meg
Betsy
Foster?
Russell. Meg Foster was in They Live and Masters of the Universe.
Who was not Betsy Russell. She was the mom in... Well, who is Betsy Russell?
Betsy Russell's in Cheerleader Camp, which you know. She's like the main girl in Cheerleader
Camp. Who's
the
mom in Friday the 13th?
Betsy Palmer.
Did you meet Betsy Palmer?
Sadly, no. Betsy Palmer was not there. Nobody really from Friday the 13th except for Kane Hodder.
Who was the woman you mentioned before Betsy Palmer? You mentioned another woman.
Nancy Loomis?
Yes, who's that?
She's in Halloween.
Okay.
She's the babysitter who's not Jamie Lee Curtis or PJ Souls.
So she's not a hermaphrodite.
The dark-haired one, right. Just the one sex organ. Anyway, it was a very cool experience. I'll talk about that a little bit more when we get into what have you seen lately. But Flashback was a ton of fun.
Is Flashback weekend part of Comic-Con?
No.
By the way, this is... I'm sorry if this sounds
the same weekend.
I'm really not playing dumb. I'm actually dumb. And it's part of the... I don't really know... I'm not a comic book guy, and I don't really subscribe to this stuff. In fact, watching Adam Beta and Mike's videos, I couldn't imagine doing something like that. I know Chicago is probably a fraction of what San Diego is, but still, like, crowds and people. I'm an indoor kid, and I still don't read comic
books. You belong on the Indoor Kids podcast.
Is there a podcast called The Indoor Kids?
It's Kumail Nanjiani.
Oh,
his wife.
I love him.
So thank you to Heather. Thank you to everybody at Flashback. I met Jonathan from Daily Dead. Everybody should follow Daily Dead, although they have like 100,000 Twitter followers. So they're good, everyone.
Yeah, follow us instead.
At F This Movie. We're at F This Movie. Anyway, that was a lot of fun. I'll talk about that a little bit more when we get into what have you seen lately. And then finally, we have to say thank you to What Culture.
Oh, yeah.
James Garcia wrote an article, 10 movie podcasts you should be listening to. And very, very graciously named us number one, which was awesome. And thanks to everybody on Twitter and Facebook who sort of shared that or congratulated us or very said nice things.
I got a Google alert, and that's how I became aware of it. And I honestly opened it thinking that it was going to be mentioned or mentioned in the comments by another person.
Right.
I'm like, there's no way that we're mentioned in this top 10. And I kept clicking next because it's one of those annoying websites, although it's a great website, don't get me wrong.
There's like a slideshow.
Yeah, it's like you can't just like list all 10 on one page. I'm a busy man. I've got busy things to do.
Well, I get one click when you can get 10.
And I'm clicking through, and I'm like, it gets to number
three. We're not number two.
And I'm like, what the hell? And I'm like, oh, great, it's going to be Slash Film number one or whatever. And I'm like, oh, no, it's F This Movie. And it was a very pleasant surprise. So
super nice. He wrote a lot of nice things, and everybody was so nice and congratulatory and supportive about it this week. So it felt really, really good at F This Movie this week. So thank you to everybody for giving us a really good week.
And we picked up a lot of followers and a lot of fans, and thank you very much.
Yeah, awesome. Keep spreading the word and sharing it, because we want to keep getting bigger.
And if we keep getting bigger, and it's not just to inflate our egos, because we already have huge heads, but it's also, we're going to provide more content and more stuff if we get bigger and have more people that want to read stuff. So
it's almost like you're blackmailing.
But we will never forget about the people that were there for us from the very beginning, the Saul Ott's, the J.M. Vargas's, the John Murphy's, etc.
I was there from the beginning. I was there on day one.
Who are you?
Okay, buddy.
Who are you?
Listen, pal.
Who are you?
Day one.
Nice.
Douglas.
Yes.
Have you seen anything good lately?
You know, I've seen a few things. I cannot compare to you. You've been very busy at Flashback Weekend, I believe it's called.
Flash Bork. It's the Flashback Knockoff.
And Chicago Cormac Corn.
Right next door.
Corn Convention.
Much smaller. Delicious corn.
I saw Man of Steel, which you've talked about on a podcast with Mark on.
Yep.
And
you passed the test.
I liked it more than you did.
Ah, that's going to be our summer show is coming up in a couple weeks. The theme of the summer episode, people liked movies more than Patrick.
Well, not even so much that. It's just that, like, I don't think there's been a movie this summer, and I haven't seen This Is the End, and I haven't seen At the World. Is that?
Yeah. The World's End. It's not out yet.
No. But what's the one with Seth Rogen?
This Is the End.
I haven't seen This Is the End, and I haven't seen At the World's End. I think I like both of those very much.
Yes.
Most of what I've seen has been like,
right.
That's exactly like the sound I make when I see this movie.
And the sound I make is like,
Yeah. But I like Man of Steel fine. I listened to the podcasts after I watched it
again.
And I agreed with everything everyone said, but I'm just like, whatever. And maybe it's a little case of...
I saw a movie, people are talking, whatever.
Right.
I'm hungry.
Well, it's no secret. I have a newborn, and I've not really seen too much, so I'm a little bit of what John calls I'm at the movies. So I was happy to be at the movies, and then I saw Pacific Rim, and I think I liked that a little more than you did. Mm. It definitely spoke to me and my sensibilities in terms of giant fighting robots that aren't
your
Transformers.
Love of kaiju.
My love
I'm
of
sorry,
Robotech.
Your love of kaiju.
Right. It was pronounced like four different ways in the movie too.
I feel kaiju.
Like each actor had a different like just the phonetically.
Kaiju.
That's pretty good.
Thanks. That's my Charlie Hunnam.
It spoke to my love of Robotech role-playing when I was a youngster, and I liked seeing some of that stuff.
Real quick, let me back up. You started to say game, and then you switched it to role-playing. No, listen, it's fine. I'm only correcting because it sounded like you said gay role-playing. But what it was that you started to say game and then changed it to role-playing. But people listening back, it sounds like you said gay role-playing.
Yes, I corrected myself. Wait, it is called role-playing, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you're right.
I didn't role-play a lot.
Super gay. It's fine.
I never played D&D. I played Robotech and a game called Rifts. R-I-F-T-S.
Yeah. I played Toon.
Is that something? I honestly don't know.
Listen, my brother was big into D&D, and I know was always was, trying right. to, like, distinguish myself. So, like, I read Cracked instead of Mad. You
Are
know?
You kidding? You
I
read
swear.
Cracked?
Listen.
By the way, Cracked is the more viable of the two these days.
Because of the online presence.
Right.
I was trying to find my own thing. So I played a Ninja Turtles role-playing game, and there's this one called Toon, and it was, like, cartoon characters, and it was set in the world of cartoons.
That's so crazy. Like, Warner Brothers, Disney, what?
No, they were made up. Brand new for the game. Toon. You had to make up your own characters.
Oh, what was your character?
I don't remember. It was usually the Toon Master.
You had the 20-sided die?
Probably.
Yes. So I didn't play too much, but I did play Robotech, and I liked it a lot. And I like the giant robots, and but I can't even tell you anything about Robotech, although I do want a Robotech movie for me to be like, this isn't as good as it should be. So I saw that. I saw you let me borrow Stoker. I saw Stoker, which I think you've talked about on the podcast before, so I'll be really brief. I didn't like it as much as you, which is a flip the script there. Huh?
Yeah, I see what you did.
I did like it a lot. And I mean, it's shot so well. It's, what's his name?
Park Chan-wook.
Park Chan-wook, who obviously is an auteur. I mean, his visual style is awesome. And he's visually amazing. If I was a douchebag, that's what I'd say. But I'm not I am the biggest douchebag, by the way. I didn't like the way it ended.
Okay.
And I won't spoil it. It just kind of had an ending that, like, it didn't seem very true to the character. And it's one of those movies, and I think we've talked about this before. I know this, like, we're 185 podcasts in.
Yeah.
I have to stop saying, I think we've talked about this before.
Because we probably have.
Who fucking cares? You're listening now, so just enjoy yourself. That it's a, what I'll say is this. I call it the contact problem. When you...
Hold on, I'm putting it into the glossary.
There you go.
Ooh, contact problem.
Here's my Bruce Willis face. When you have a movie like Contact, which I like that movie a lot.
Yeah.
In fact, it's one of those movies that you've got a lot that every 3 to 15 months, I'll be like, I got to watch Contact. I have to drop what I'm doing and watch Contact. It's never as satisfying as I want it to be, but I still kind of love it. Anyway, in Contact, there's a whole beat where they, obviously aliens, send a message down to build a ship and they go meet aliens. And we set that movie, you have to meet the aliens. But of course, 2 hours of the movie is set up like, what are these aliens going to be like? When you finally get to the aliens, it's a disappointment. And I feel like when you set any movie up that there's just all these teasing things. It happens a lot in horror movies. Like, what is the ghost and what is the thing?
Yes, absolutely.
There's all this setup and all this plot that you're going through it and you're so engaged that when it's finally revealed that it's a guy in a mask in the old abandoned amusement park and you're the Scooby-Doo gang, it's never quite as satisfying as you want it to be. Although, caveat to that Contact story is I watched Contact recently. That's right. It was on TV. And the ending... for the first time in watching it maybe 6 or 7 times, really, really worked for me.
Interesting.
I don't know why. So maybe either changing or the movie is, I don't know. I don't know.
I could see that happening after seeing it once or twice because now knowing what the ending is, you can anticipate it and you don't feel the disappointment anymore. You know, it's like I've come to terms with what this ending is and... but you've seen it more than that, so it's interesting that on the
maybe not 6 times,
viewing,
but definitely more than 2 or 3. Yeah. It might have been like the 4th or 5th.
That movie has a Jake Busey problem and a Tom Skerritt problem.
And also a Jodie Foster problem in that she is... I know she's a talented actress, and you have you seen Elysium?
No.
I know a big complaint... I have not either. I know a complaint out there about Elysium is that she is in a different movie.
Yeah.
And I can't speak to that. I think who reviewed it?
Alex.
Alex did. And he talked about that briefly on the website. So check out Alex's review of Elysium. Jodie Foster, I know she's a talented actress. I know she has this great body of work. Sometimes her choices are crazy. And at the end of Contact, she plays like a frazzled, like you want to shake her and be like, shut up and talk normal. I don't know.
It's, but who kicks ass in Contact?
Matthew McConaughey.
McConaughey. He's like, all right. Anyway, I believe in God.
Stoker is good. Check out Stoker.
In summation, I like Stoker. I'm trying to remember what I've seen. I know I've seen a bunch of stuff lately. I saw Planes because I had to take my son.
What did your son think of Planes?
Yeah, he loves Planes. Planes is a garbage movie. Planes, I haven't taken him to see a ton of movies, but even the ones I have taken him to, Cars 2, not great. So much better than Planes. Epic, we went and saw Epic a few months ago. Like, Epic is fine. Planes ranks down there with the Smurfs as the worst shit really? I've taken him to see. It is so bad in every single way. The animation is fine. Every other thing about it is very, very terrible. And that movie it embarrasses me because I know Pixar didn't put it out, but Disney should be embarrassed to put it out because it's such an obvious cash grab. And by the way, it's working because you go to Target and they are out of Planes toys and Planes shirts. I mean, the shelves are cleaned off. So it's obvious that they put it out as a way to sell toys because the Cars toys sell so well. But that's what it feels like. It feels, I mean, the writing is on par with like a Saturday morning cartoon from 1985. I thought it was really terrible.
It was supposed to be direct to video, right?
Yes. And then they realized they could make more money if they put it in theaters.
This is totally a dumb hypothetical question, but yeah. If you were at Disney and you're in charge, like you, I understand P&L and prop and money and you've got to get money. And I understand all that. But if you're going to actually green light a movie, I've had too much caffeine.
No such thing.
And you are putting this movie out, and you know everyone's going to see it. Every kid, every parent with their kid is going to see it. Aren't you embarrassed a little bit?
Especially, like, John Lasseter's name is on it as a producer, and...
Does he have any creative input whatsoever? Or is it just like that
he's the overseer of everything at Disney, so he should have some creative input, and he should be embarrassed, because, again, we all are of the belief that Pixar stands for integrity, you know, which... I think every year they're proving a little bit more and more that maybe that's not entirely true because they're just sequelizing all their shit. Having said that, Monsters University was one of the better surprises of the summer.
There's also another Pixar movie coming out later this
Finding
year.
Finding Dory? Oh, later this year? No. Yeah. I don't think so. I think Disney has Frozen coming out, but that's not Pixar.
Is that
Pixar.
Disney? Okay.
Yeah, that's not Pixar.
What's that about?
Based on the preview, it's based on a snowman and a moose fighting over a carrot nose.
Is there's a preview out?
Yeah.
There's a trailer out there.
You should watch it.
I should.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
What would we do with that? So I saw Planes.
Just failure.
Garbage movie. I saw Orphan for the first time. I won't talk about it too much, but that's a crazy movie.
Yeah, I mean,
people should see it.
I don't read about
it first.
I have not seen Orphan, but I know I ruined it for myself.
Yeah. I think it's still worth seeing.
It's still worth seeing.
Yeah, I do think it's still worth seeing.
Why would you watch Orphan in August?
I'm just on a kick, probably because I was at Flashback.
It's interesting that you cannot fucking wait. Sorry, pardon my language.
Listen, it's always a good time. Why would I wait?
Because that's the whole point.
There's still going to be plenty to watch in October.
I understand that, but you've got to be a pleasure delayer. That's the whole point. You've got 11 months of not watching certain things, and obviously
I'm not going to not watch horror movies all
year. There's obviously exceptions to that, but Orphan has been around for years.
I got plenty of stuff to watch in October. I'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. And then come October 28th, you'll be fucking hating scary movies.
Yeah, that's what always happens.
Yes, it will. Trust Doug.
Trust in Doug. At Flashback, I saw four movies because at night they would do screenings. So Friday night, I saw a 35mm print for the first time ever of Night of the Living Dead.
Wow.
And then they showed Hatchet 3, introduced by Kane Hodder. I reviewed Hatchet 3 on the site. My problems with Hatchet 3 are still my problems with Hatchet 3. I like Adam Green. I'm a fanboy. I've talked about it before plenty on this site.
He's a producer. He didn't direct that, though.
He wrote it and produced it, did not direct it.
See, I know some stuff.
Yeah. The movie has problems. It was fine. It was entertaining. It's 80 minutes. It was fun to watch with an audience, but the movie still has some problems. I like it overall just because, but whatever. Night of the Living Dead was an interesting experience. I was very tired, which is a problem, because for the first time I noticed how little happens in that movie. Mm-hmm. The print was not great. Heads were cut off for a lot of scenes. I know that is
scary, right? Like they're decapitated.
Yeah. All these disembodied bodies. All these disembodied bodies. That is your favorite horror movie of all time.
That's right.
Watching in a theater.
No, here's the
for the first time ever, all I could think to myself was, why is this Doug's favorite horror movie?
Now, here's what you got to do. Here's the key. This is what in Doug we trust, and here's a key. Doug's keys all to right. successful living yes. and movie watching. Watch a movie and be so impressed with it. Don't go back to it too often. I've only seen Night of the Living Dead maybe 4 times.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite movie. I haven't seen it in probably 5 years, so I'm not going to see it again.
I mean,
I'll see it again.
This just came up recently.
By the way,
I was a Brian De Palma.
I'm being sarcastic, too. I do want to see it again, but I do realize that sometimes when you watch something, sometimes when something from your past is so important and powerful and moving, oftentimes when you revisit it, it's not as great. I still posit, and my experience with Night of the Living Dead was watching it in JB's class when he was a teacher in the Virgin Islands where I went to high school, that
hey, man.
He showed it, and it was the first time in my whole life as more of a grown-up, a high school kid, but still like kind of aware of my choices and decisions. I completely forgot where I was, and that effect on me overrides maybe some other sensibilities.
Yeah. It's still a great movie. It's still super influential. It does so many things well. It was weird. Again, maybe because I was tired, but watching it in a theater, I had the thought, and this was last week's weekend weigh-in, was inspired by watching Night of the Living Dead on a giant screen in this huge cavernous theater for the first time, thinking, this plays better on television.
Yeah, and that's all right. I've only seen it on television.
It works better on TV. Some movies do, I guess. I never would have thought that. That movie works better on TV.
Well, here's a dumb question. Obviously, you mentioned, and there's a whole documentary out right now called Birth of the Living Dead, it used to be called something else, but that's the new title, where they talk about how influential this movie was, how it inspired its generation of filmmakers, blah, blah, blah. Yes, while on one hand that can make you like the movie more or respect it more, does that change your overall opinion of a movie, or does the movie still, I mean, I understand that the movie still has to work no matter what.
Yeah.
But how much does something like that, meaning that this movie was the first of its kind and really kind of changed the rules, how much does that knowledge affect how much you enjoy the movie?
I don't know if it affects how much I enjoy the movie. It's just I would never tear the movie down because of that, because I know how important it is and how many things it started and how influential it is and all that stuff. So I would never say, like, it's a shit movie. But I could still say, like, yeah, but I don't – I mean, Citizen Kane is, like, not a movie that I enjoy watching all that often.
Really?
It's fine, like, but I'm very rarely am I like, I got to put on Citizen Kane.
Yeah, yes, that's true. I'm always incredibly entertained by it. I know that seems kind of silly.
And the more you know about how it was made and, like, how certain shots were done and stuff, I think the more you enjoy watching it.
Sure.
On a story level, again, it's not my go-to movie, but I would never tear it down because it's like, it's fucking Citizen Kane, you know? Right. Night of the Living Dead is the Citizen Kane of Living Dead movies. of zombie movies.
Of Diary of the Dead. And
I mean, we're so
Land of the Dead.
Inundated with Walking Dead and zombie bullshit. And, like, Night of the Living Dead invented all that shit. All of it. You gotta shoot them in the head. They eat the living. I mean, all that shit was made up by George Romero.
Right. Was it?
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't any... Well, there's folklore from, like, Haiti and stuff.
Yeah, but that's different. That's different.
Like voodoo?
Haiti, like Virgin Islands? Like where you went to high school?
Like, hey, like Port-au-Prince. Port-au-Prince
like,
High School.
Like Rihanna? Did you go to school with Rihanna?
Barbados High. Me and Rihanna. What's the big deal?
The next night, they did a screening of Pet Sematary with the cast in attendance. Mary Lambert, the director, was supposed to be there. She was a no-show. Heather got to introduce it, and she let me throw t-shirts out to the audience. Nice. I didn't make it past, like, the sixth row.
Did you have a t-shirt cannon?
I have arms built for podcasting.
Please tell me you had a t-shirt cannon. I just shot some kid right in the face.
Oh, God, I wish. Pet Sematary is a movie I will never sort out my feelings on, because there are some things that it does so well, and some things that are so schlocky. It's so hard to watch now that I have kids, and especially the little kid Gage. You know, one of the only things in the movie he says is, uh-oh, and it's adorable, right? And the last time I saw it at a Music Box Massacre was right when Charlie was, like, 1.5, 2, and only saying, uh-oh. And now I have a daughter who mostly says, uh-oh, and it's like, why do I keep watching this movie when my kids are acting like Gage and always trying to kill me? And I'm like, kids, put the razor blade down. And I syringe him in the neck.
You met Nico Hughes, too,
right? No fair. I did. He's,
He's a nice guy.
He is. He was very nice. Everybody was very nice.
He walked. Patrick told me right before the podcast that Nico Hughes walked by him and said, "Sup?"
It's true. And I was like, boys have a penis. Girls have a vagina. Yeah, so Pet Sematary, I have mixed feelings on. It still has Zelda, which is the scariest fucking thing in the world. And then I got to see an early screening of Your Next, which I won't talk about too much because I'm going to try and put a review out later this week. I will say the movie comes out this Friday when this podcast comes out.
No, this will come out Monday.
But I'm saying, like, this will come out the week that this comes out. Gotcha. It comes out this Friday. If you're listening to this a month from now, ignore this part. Everyone should go see Your Next the weekend it opens. They should make it a big hit. It's the kind of movie that you should see with a big audience. It's a lot of fun. It's as good as you hope it is, I think. I thought it was really, really fantastic.
You should read your review after the movie, after you watch the movie?
Well, I mean, no, because I'm going to try and review it spoiler-free. But it is...
Well, you suggested to me to not even watch a preview.
Yeah. I think the
movie... And that's kind of my thing.
I think the movie is better...
Knowing nothing.
Knowing as little as you can. Gotcha. Which isn't to say that it's a movie that's all twisty and shit, but it's just, it's more fun to be surprised by stuff. But I think it's great. Go opening weekend. This movie should make a bunch of money.
Will it?
I certainly hope so. I kind of think not. But I think this movie should do Scream. This movie should do Scream business, I think. That's the movie it reminds me most of.
Okay.
That kind of fun.
Lots of Matthew Lillard.
Tons of Lillard. Tons of Dewey, Jamie,
Deputy Dewey,
Kennedy. Jamie, he keeps Kennedy? Giving people the Jamie Kennedy experience. And he's like, "You got X'd." I remember when that show was on for that 6 weeks
on the UPN.
Yeah, and I caught 2 seconds of it, and someone was like, "You got X'd," and that person started cracking up, and they realized they'd been had. And it occurred to me that if someone ever said to me, like, "You've been X'd," I wouldn't know what they meant. That's a thing. Somebody would have to explain to me first. Hi, I'm Jamie Kennedy.
Right.
I was in Malibu's Most Wanted, and then explained to me that he had a show, a prank show, where they X people. And I'd be like, thank you.
And then you'd still be like, I'd prefer not to be X. Is that cool?
Can you sign my Blu-ray of Son of the Mask? Let's talk about Kick-Ass 2, almost 30 minutes into the show.
Speaking of movies, it's hard to sort your feelings out about
it. No, it's not for me.
No, I mean, for me, the first one more so than the second one.
Yes, okay. Let's talk about Kick-Ass 2.
When you point your finger at me, point back at yourself.
You're right. We're going to talk spoiler-free for a little while if you haven't seen Kick-Ass 2, and then we'll get into spoilers later in the show. Here's the thing. I thought Doug should be on the Kick-Ass 2 show because Doug is not the biggest fan of Kick-Ass. You think it's okay?
I think it's okay. I'm confused by a lot of the love for it.
Okay. I like it a real lot.
Right.
I'm a big fan. I think... If you were to go home tonight and watch the first Kick-Ass,
mm-hmm.
you would understand much better why I love it.
Okay.
Because this movie, to me, highlights everything that the first movie does well. Because this movie, I felt, did none of it well. And I won't bury the lead on Kick-Ass 2. I thought it was really bad.
Okay.
Really bad. I kind of suspected it would be, just based on the trailers. It seemed like somebody who saw Kick-Ass and understood none of it and tried to recreate it and did a terrible approximation. And did everything that to me... And Kick-Ass, people are mixed on. A lot of people really like it. A lot of people really hate it. And to me, this was the movie... Kick-Ass 2 is the movie that the haters talked about with the first movie. Everybody who thought Kick-Ass was garbage, they're actually talking about Kick-Ass 2.
Do you think anyone out there will love Kick-Ass 2?
Sure. I think most of the people in our audience seem to really like it.
Now, here's the thing. When I saw Kick-Ass for the first time, it was one of those situations where I missed it in the theaters. I think I saw it on a Blu-ray weeks later.
Yeah.
And obviously the hype for that movie was pretty intense, especially from the fanboy Comic-Con type communities. I remember even from you saying, like, this is great. You got to see this.
Yeah.
And obviously that means a lot to me, and I'm not being sarcastic when Patrick highly recommends something. It's like, I'm excited to see this movie also.
Yeah, thanks. I just saw Stoker.
Stoker's good. Stoker's fine.
Stoker makes me want to watch Contact.
Let's get back to Contact.
All right.
When I saw Kick-Ass for the first time...
You like being sodomized?
I thought you were going to... I was going to... You like being sodomized? And the answer is yes. When I saw Kick-Ass for the first time, and I've only seen it, I think, 1.5 times.
Okay.
I was kind of confused as to why everyone was losing their shit over it.
Okay.
Because that's how that was the impression that I got from people's reaction.
Right.
I mean, that obviously it varied a lot. I know Roger Ebert famously gave it 1 star and called it like in his R.I.P. Raj.
Yeah.
He used to have a column called like
Your Movie Sucks.
Your Movie Sucks, and it was part of Your Movie Sucks.
Yeah.
And I recently reread his review of the first one to prep myself for this one, and I don't even necessarily agree with his review, because again, I don't hate the first one.
He couldn't get past Hit Girl.
Yeah.
And that was the basis of his 1-star review, and that's understandable, you know, but...
I'm going to use a horrible, horrible cliche.
All right.
But the first movie...
A bird in the hand... I'm sorry, go ahead.
The first movie My impression of the first movie was that it wanted to have its cake and eat it, too.
I do not understand your metaphor.
Well, you see, the
French is this
revolution.
Uh-huh. Go on.
Have you seen Marie Antoinette?
Oh, the one with the Cure music?
I believe that so.
One? I have.
It's pretty good, right?
I like it. That girl from Bring It On, what happened to her? Did they behead her at the end?
She gets naked on a mound in Melancholia.
Oh.
So
her world is upside down.
She's an upside down?
Of course she's an upside down.
I'm looking at upside down on your shelf right now.
Why I did not buy it.
Why do you own upside down?
It was sent to me as a screener.
That's very nice that whoever sent that to you.
Thank you, the people who sent upside down. I promise to finish watching it as soon as I can get past the first half hour.
Of it being garbage.
Which was not good. Not good at all.
By the way, I remember reviewing...
Jim Sturgis not capturing my attention.
The trailer for Upside Down came out like 8 months ago and I saw it and... It seemed interesting, and I felt like once the title came, like, Upside, I was like, fuck, that's the name of the movie? Like, it's called Upside Down?
Someone, like, smoked weed and was like, what if half the world's upside down? Yeah, that's the movie. That's the movie.
That's so many movies where I think that guys are just, like, doing drugs and like, what if this was crazy, man?
Your movie has one idea.
What are we talking about?
Contact.
Contact. I got a contact high from Kick-Ass 2. So Kick-Ass, I feel like it wants to say these things and wants to be a certain way and yet still is gratuitous and still is... And I'm not even... I don't even...
I would agree with that, but that's one of the things that I kind of like about it.
I mean, we're not spoiling Kick-Ass. I mean, the movie is about...
We will probably be spoiling Kick-Ass.
Help me out even describing Kick-Ass, because the movie is about... Real life people,
right.
Supposedly,
right.
Putting on costumes and pretending to be superheroes,
right.
Much like the movie Super, which also came out with Rainn Wilson, which I actually think does it a little better than Kick-Ass.
I think the movies have very different goals. I think part of the thing that people, and I don't want to turn this into a Kick-Ass show, but I think part of the problem that people got hung up on with Kick-Ass was that, yes, it presents itself as these are ordinary people who put on costumes and try to be superheroes, and... Yet the movie is still very, very comic booky to the point where it ends with a guy flying around in a jetpack and shooting a guy with a rocket launcher. Like, the movie never pretends to be realistic, even though I do think it, more than other movies of its type, does try and consider some of the effects of violence in a more realistic way. I always think of that first
time. I just made a face, that's why he's...
The first time that Kick-Ass goes out to fight crime, he's immediately stabbed in the stomach and, like, hit by a car. And it's like, yeah, dummy, you can't go out and be a superhero, you know?
Right.
It's also very casual about the violence later on, where people are just slaughtered wholesale, and it's like, haha, because there's a fucking Banana Split song playing. So I don't think its goal is to play the realism of what if regular people tried to be superheroes. I think it's still very much part of a comic book world.
I can agree with that, but I do think that it's...
Kick-Ass 2 doesn't do that.
I think, and again, I honestly haven't seen... I should have watched Kick-Ass.
Yeah, you should have.
One before...
The movie's Kick something.
Dick. Kick Dick.
Kick-Ass is Kick Dick. At this movie.
Patrick and Doug, please. I want to share that byline. I still think that the first movie, and again, I don't dislike it as much as most people, and I don't even mind the violence, and I don't mind that Chloe Grace Moretz says cunt.
Right.
I think that was some people's issue.
Sure. She's 10.
Right. That she's so young and she's whatever. I thought Nick Cage was great.
Yeah.
I do think that it's trying to be satire, but also it just, it's, I feel like it's a mess. Honestly, I think that the movie is a mess. I think Matthew Vaughn is beloved, and I don't know why.
Okay.
I don't even, I mean, X-Men First Class is half of a good movie, the half that's trying to be Inglourious Basterds.
The first half.
And half of, like, a Firefly dance party.
But it's Stardust garbage. Is good.
Stardust, I have only seen once on your recommendation, and I kind of zoned out. I don't remember much about it. But I'm also not a fantasy movie fan.
No,
I'm
not going to be part of it, too. I truly wish, and obviously we have other things to do, like record this podcast, I truly wish the second Kick-Ass 2 ended. You could put on Kick-Ass 1 and just watch the first 10 minutes.
I might tonight because I'm on so much fucking monster right now that I can't even, like, focus my eyeballs.
Just in the fucking opening shot, you would say, Matthew Vaughn is such a better director.
Oh, I can...
Than this Chris Wadlow guy?
Yeah, my totally
this
passive...
This motherfucker.
My totally passive-aggressive knock that's half-baked and really you could tear it apart about Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah.
Will not hold up to the fact that he is infinitely better than whatever director directed Chris Wadlow directed this movie.
It is such a pale imitation.
Did Matthew Vaughn write Kick-Ass also?
Yes, him and Jane Goldman.
And again, I don't even, we're not making this about Kick-Ass, but my issue with it was simply, I'm sure a lot of it was expectations, and we've talked about that a lot in the show, and I think it's, I do think we'll keep talking about expectations because it is single-handedly fascinating about movies. Whenever you have expectations, you're bound to have an opinion about it. It's just, it's going to totally skew everything as opposed to watching something with no expectations. I mean, how often does that happen? Not very often. But watching Kick-Ass with these expectations, based on your praise of it, there were some other people on the site, I think, also liked it a lot. And I watched it, and I was kind of like, huh. And I think also my wife, who didn't hear any expectations, aside from like, oh, Patrick said we should watch this, I don't think she liked it at all, but she's also kind of anti-violence, just that's who she is. But I did get the vibe that, like, yes, I get that it's trying to do these things, and it's trying to be satire, and it's trying to show a comic book world and some real-life stuff, but it just, on a dime, will flip between going... It chooses whatever it wants to choose, and it's not... I think that it should be more consistent in its approach to the subject.
Sure.
That's my whole thing.
Sure.
Kick-Ass 2...
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, I don't think I hated it as much as you did.
Interesting.
Well, because it seems like you really dislike it.
Because I thought it was bad in every way.
Right. I can find a couple things to like about it.
Okay.
And by the way, these me finding things to like about it in quotes are not things that make it a good movie at all. It's just like, I thought some of the fight sequences were well choreographed.
Yeah, okay.
I thought...
Again, watch Kick-Ass. Again.
There was a couple jokes. I think I laughed twice.
I think I did, too. The Will Smith joke.
There was a Will Smith joke and the elevator.
Yeah.
Donald Faison talking about it.
They're total throwaways.
And the movie needs more of that or whatever.
The jokes that the movie does have are hilarious.
The movie doesn't try to make jokes, though. I don't feel...
No, sometimes it does. Like pants on fire.
Oh, yeah.
And CGI poo. That's a joke.
So my point simply is this. I would not recommend this movie. I did not like it, but here's the caveat to that. I've said caveat now twice on the podcast. That
caveat cast.
Even though my reaction to Kick-Ass is, as I just said, I really did go into this movie because I know that you're a fan and that it's kind of this franchise that people like, and it's based on a graphic novel or comic book that people like, and it was a huge to-do at Comic-Con. There's all these like promotional things there. I really did go into this with an open mind. I really tried to say, like, if I like this, I'm not going to... And I feel like I'm fairly open-minded when it comes to things like this. If I really, really like it, I'm going to like it.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to be like, well, the first movie, yeah. So I'm not going to like this one. And my biggest critique of this movie, and you say it's bad, and I can't even argue that, is I thought it was boring.
Because it's bad. It was boring because it's bad.
Or is it bad because it's boring?
It was boring because it doesn't present you with characters, really. It doesn't give them anything to do. It doesn't really put them on any sort of arc. Hit Girl has the closest thing to an arc in this movie, and she's probably the best thing about it, but that's super problematic to me. The movie lost me almost in the first 5 minutes, and I tried to go into it with an open mind as well, because I wasn't like, I'm ready to just fuck this movie because they didn't bring Matthew Vaughn back, and it's this guy Chris Wadlow, and he made Cry Wolf, and I fucking hate that movie.
Cry underscore Wolf?
Yes, and that is a garbage movie if you want to see a garbage movie.
I'd recommend Wolf Creek.
He wrote and directed this, and it just immediately, and again, I was trying not to sit there and just compare it to Kick-Ass, but I put on Kick-Ass last night, and just, even the way that the colors are saturated in Kick-Ass, is so great. And this movie is just drab and ugly. It's badly shot. It's badly edited. The score
is flat. The movie's flat too. Yeah.
The score is repetitive and problematic. There's maybe one almost good fight scene, and it's given away in all the trailers with the Hit Girl on top of a moving van, but it's so green screened to death that I just kept getting pulled out of it. Again, I recommend that you watch the first Kick-Ass, and there's some shit in there that's so cool. Jim Carrey does his best, you know, and when he's on screen, it's okay.
Should we just switch to spoilers, just because pretty much people know our take, it's bad, don't go see it.
I do. I
liked it slightly more than Patrick, but that's not even a recommendation.
And if you're somebody who doesn't like the first Kick-Ass, maybe you'll think it's fine. You may even say, like, it's the same movie. Why are you objecting to one but not the other?
You know, and I guess the thing you'll say, and you say, I should watch Kick-Ass again right now, is that one of my takeaways from it was, like, it's not any different. I mean, they're obviously different movies, but my reaction to it was almost the same as my reaction to Kick-Ass. And that probably breaks your heart a little bit, right?
No, it's fine, because I certainly can't change your reaction.
No, it fucking breaks your heart.
I'm devastated.
Admit it.
I can't change your reactions to the first movie. And we may just disagree on certain things, because I think...
I do not agree to that.
A lot of what the first movie is doing is what you're talking about, but I think a lot of it's deliberate, and I think it's complicated on purpose, and I think that the movie wants to present you with an action scene in which a 10-year-old girl kills a hallway full of guys that's fun and thrilling and cool to watch and violent, and there's this fucking Kick-Ass song playing, and Kick-Ass. and it's all great, and then you stop and you take a step back and you consider the implications of this, and you're like, oh, this is fucked up. And the movie recognizes that. I don't think the movie's saying it's awesome that this 10-year-old girl is a sociopath.
It's saying that a little bit.
I don't think that.
But you can't, I mean, even if...
Okay, no.
Even if it's not saying that, or that's not his intention, it's saying that a little bit. Because that's the takeaway a lot of people had, you know? And I'm saying that, like, you can say that those people don't get it. And I think that there's an argument to be made for that, that you either get it or you don't get it.
Sure.
But I do think, and I'm not even subscribing to that school, because I kind of get it, but I'm just, it doesn't quite click for me. And that's not even to say that I need the movie to be spelled out and, like, everything needs to be black and white and this and that, whatever. I just feel like, I do like what you're talking about, but I feel like those beats are less than the beats of the coolness, like, meaning, like, the beats of consideration.
Well, and the movie doesn't necessarily stop to make you consider that. I mean, I think the movie just expects you to do some of that work yourself. And I only bring that up because I think the first movie is aware of that, and I don't think this movie is. I think this Kick-Ass 2 just presents Hit Girl as a fucking superhero.
Yeah.
Without understanding any of the stuff that was transgressive about the first movie. This movie, Kick-Ass 2, tries to have multiple sort of emotional beats. And I find the scene, and again, spoilers for the first Kick-Ass, because it's talked about a lot in Kick-Ass 2, that the shadow of Nicolas Cage sort of looms heavy over the proceedings in this movie. I find the scene where he dies in the original movie very moving. I was really affected by it emotionally the first time I saw it, and every time I've seen it since. And I think this movie tries to recapture that beat more than once. Mm. And comes up so short, and I think that's a testament to A, how badly it's made, and B, how little we come to care about any of these characters.
Well, let's move to spoilers now, so you know pretty much what we're talking about. And
sorry for only talking about this movie for 15 minutes, non-spoilers, but whatever. I suggest you don't see Kick-Ass 2.
So, I mean, I don't think we're going to... There's nothing, I mean, there's not, like, too many spoilers in this movie.
But people,
the biggest one, which I'll say right now...
All right, so now we're in spoilers.
...is that Jim Carrey, his part is only, like, screen time maybe 7-10 minutes.
Right.
And he dies fairly early on.
And it means nothing.
It means nothing, but it's supposed to mean everything.
Exactly. He's the big daddy of this movie. He's the more accomplished actor, giving the more interesting performance, and then he's killed off at about the midpoint.
Is that when Big Daddy was killed off?
Just about, maybe a little bit more than half. And his death is meant to sort of trigger the rest of the movie. And then this movie is so shitty that they realize, we didn't make it yet. Let's kill off another father figure.
Not even a father figure.
An actual father, right. So this is now, you know, Jim Carrey's a father figure, but now every father has been killed in the Kick-Ass mythology. Fucking Red Mist's father died, Hit Girl's father died, and now Kick-Ass's father dies. And for what? Every scene in this movie, to me...
The movie hates fathers.
...was bad. But again, for what? I don't mind the parallel between these two heroes, Hit Girl and Red Mist, who've lost their fathers, and sort of this is how they react, although they sort of react in the same way. To add in Kick-Ass's father for no good reason other than then we need some sort of quote-unquote emotional beat where he then says, I'm not going to be Kick-Ass, and then two scenes later he's like, no, I'll be Kick-Ass again. Just the way the movie starts is so misguided because it's him saying, like, I gave up being Kick-Ass, and then a scene later he's like, no, let's team up and let's be a team, and then they sort of train together, and then
they stop.
Hit Girl, nothing makes any goddamn sense.
They start again.
The movie doesn't pick up really from where the first movie left off. It doesn't find them in a new and or interesting place. It appears to want to break up Kick-Ass and his girlfriend so that he can fuck Night Bitch. So what? She misunderstands him in the hallway and slaps him, and then we're just like, and that's the end of that.
Was that girl in the first one too? Girlfriend?
Yeah. And it's played sort of a significant part.
And she, okay, so the girlfriend is in the first one, significant. She's in the second one, is his girlfriend. They break up fairly casually, and then she admits that she has had sex with a trainer or something. So we're supposed to be like, oh, so Kick-Ass is the victim here.
She's not really saying she cheated on him. What she's saying is she fucked that guy before they were dating, because that guy's referred to in the first movie, the guy that she talked about.
Okay.
But it's like his dick was so much bigger than yours. I will say that the movie does have a misogyny problem.
I'll say this, and this maybe isn't in the same
vein. Also, the movie hates everyone. It's not just women. Sorry.
The movie isn't... this doesn't necessarily fit in the misogyny vein, although it's not too far off. The sexualization... Okay. My disclaimer is, yes, Doug is a pervert. Doug likes naked women.
Sure.
I'm a big sleazeball, and my wife and daughter agree with you that I am disgusting. I am gross, okay? I do, you know, whatever. I'm the guy that points out the naked chicks. Is it pretty clear what
I think so.
Okay, good. Disclaimer over.
Yeah.
That being said, I'm still a human being, and I'm still thoughtful, and sometimes I make jokes, and who doesn't like to look at a naked celebrity? But when it comes to Chloe Grace Moretz, who is 15? 16, maybe? In real life.
Yeah, maybe 16, I don't know.
The sexualization of her, not even so much that they're not putting her in necessarily skimpy outfits,
right.
It is the camera,
yeah,
how it's looking at her and her plump lips and her face and, like, what the fuck are we supposed to think?
Right. And the first movie was accused of that, and I never thought that, and especially that scene near the end.
I don't agree with that either.
Well, because there's a scene near the end where she shows up in, like, a schoolgirl uniform, and it's a trick,
yeah.
And she says, like, I lost my daddy. But I never read that as being that sexualized thing. To me, that says something about the person who's taking offense. Like, that's not a sexual image. That's a joke about, like, I'm a young girl. Not like...
Oh, it's commenting on the people's obsession, yeah.
To me, if you saw that as like, oh, why are they trying to sex her up? Like, no, that's on you. But okay, that's about the first movie.
Well, this one I just thought was, I mean, again, she's not really tarted up too much, although there is one scene where she is, and it's comical, where she goes back to the cafeteria, and that whole beat where she has a sick stick, it's a weird reference to Minority Report, and...
How about that scene?
And it's...
How
it's,
about it?
It's a fucking bullshit
Will
garbage.
You see a worse scene in a movie this year?
It is on par with a Wayans Brothers movie. Like, it's like a white... It's taken out of White Chicks, you know, and that scene... There's a scene, you're listening right now, you've maybe seen the movie, where she hits a girl with this DARPA weapon that is called a sick stick that makes them vomit, but not only that, it also gives you diarrhea. So there's one scene where the bitch girl enemy, the heavy in the movie,
right,
who's opposite Hit Girl, who's not even a super...
Who also has a pretty long scene where she's sexualized, even though she's a high school student.
Right.
And that's actually in the trailers, because Alice Eve should always be in her underwear in the trailers. Just like, oh, do we have anything that suggests some sexuality? Put it in the trailer.
And that girl is, by the way, a January Jones clone, am I right?
Yeah.
So in this, the sick stick hits her, and she pukes and shits in one, and they show CGI puke and CGI poop coming out of her.
Our theater laughed.
Yeah, whatever. But yeah, so watching the camera in these angles and, like, the slight filter and her... And Chloe Grace Moretz is a very cute girl, and I think she'll be a stunner when she grows up. But right now, she's a kid. And as gross as I am, even I can acknowledge that that's fucking
weird.
Well,
but again, the movie also ends with her and Kick-Ass kissing, and it's like, oh, so this is a romantic thing now?
Like, it's very weird. And I don't even mind, like, a young girl, like, that was my first kiss. That's a different thing, and yes. I don't even mind that.
Yes.
But the way it was done here is, like, that's where basically everything led to?
Everything is handled badly. Aaron Johnson, you know, I think he's an okay actor. I thought he was very bad in this movie, and I don't know if he just was not a fan of the material, if he just had nothing to do. Again, go back and watch the first movie. He's much better.
He's actually much better. One of my problems with the first movie too, and I can't even I can't expand on that too much. Just like I remember being a little like I thought he was a little vanilla, which I know is maybe part of the character. I don't know.
Sure. Again, you had a sense in the first movie of why he sort of wanted to do this. It came out of a belief that somebody should be trying to do some good. But all that seems to be erased in this movie. I mean, they try and touch on it. I thought the movie got a little bit better as it went along. I thought the second half was a little bit better than the first,
yeah,
only because
sure.
It introduced this idea.
The first half is, I mean, I was like, what are
holy
you, like,
shit.
It was horrible.
And again, even that six stick scene resolves a storyline that takes half the movie, where Hit Girl stops being Hit Girl and tries to be a popular girl at school, and then they turn on her, and then she makes them puke and shit, and then the rest of the movie is just about her being Hit Girl again. Mm. It seems to want to ask questions about these characters, but not really. It just doesn't know what to do with them, so it just has them give up being superheroes or pick up the mantle again on a scene-by-scene basis, depending on what they need the drama for that one scene to be, as opposed to the movie as a whole. There's an interesting sort of idea that that Kick-Ass, that his existence has inspired other people to do the same thing, and so he hooks up with a team of would-be superheroes. Nothing's ever really developed of that, because they're all actual, they're all gifted fighters, and they all fight each other, and people die, and but then other people don't. I just, nothing's really done of it, except that we get to see more people in costumes, that by the end of the movie, we're seeing two armies of costumed people fight one another, but there's no connection between this idea of we're normal people putting on costumes and fighting.
No.
And I know I said that the original Kick-Ass still takes place in a comic book universe. This movie, on a scene-by-scene basis, not to use that expression again, goes out of its way to say, this isn't a comic book. This is real life. I mean, they just keep fucking beating you over the head with that.
They literally say that, yeah.
But there is no connection to real life by the time we have two armies of people in suits fighting one another. No connection.
I don't even mind, in theory, the idea of it's a sequel, bigger, more,
I don't
whatever,
either.
Two armies
fighting
each
other.
Stop
saying it's real life.
Well, exactly.
Stop saying it's real life.
Yeah.
And embrace the comic bookiness of it. And again, I know these are based on Mark Millar comic books, and I haven't read them, mostly because I think I would hate them. Everything that I've read about them is like, oh, he does way more of the shit I can't stand.
Like what?
Like way more mean-spirited violence, way more rape, way more swearing, the dog gets killed, Night Bitch is raped. It's a joke in this movie. He's gonna rape her, and then he can't get it up, and I guess we're all supposed to be laughing. And that juxtaposition makes me sick to my stomach, sort of, that we're playing this beat as a laugh, and I think his comic book is filled with that kind of shit. Like, isn't this funny, like this snot-nosed punk kid sneering at everything? Haven't read them. This is just an interpretation I've gotten from secondhand sources. The movie's full of that kind of shit, where it's like, we're supposed to be laughing at stuff, like when he kills his mom in the tanning bed, and I'm not the first person to point this out. I read a review that pointed this out, but Christopher Mintz-Plasse, who was the Red Mist in the first movie, and now he's the motherfucker, gives a terrible performance, non-existent as a character.
Time out, though. He's never given a good performance.
I thought he's fine as McLovin,
you know,
and I actually really like him in Role Models.
He's fine in McLovin, in Superbad, because he is McLovin.
Yes.
And to a certain extent, he is the character in Role Models.
I agree with that.
Right. He's not an actor. It's like taking, what's his name, from Napoleon Dynamite and putting in Blades of Glory. It's like, this guy can't act. What's his name, by the way? What's Napoleon Dynamite's name, Patrick?
John Heater.
John Heater. Thank you. Jeez, took you long enough.
I was only coming up with Jared Hess, the director of Napoleon Dynamite.
That, he obviously is that character, and you can't take him out and do, and Christopher Mintz-Plasse is, I don't feel bad for him because he's a millionaire and he's young and he's got money and he's whatever. But I feel like, I don't know what else he can do.
He flounders and embarrasses himself in this movie. And they're constantly... You can't have it both ways. You can't make him the butt of a joke, how inconsequential he is, how ineffectual he is, rather, as a villain, while also dozens of policemen are being murdered by the people on his team. And it's funny that he can't rape this girl, but still he's, like, trying to rape this girl and beats her until she's in the hospital.
Don't worry, though. She, in the next scene, she's back.
And it's not ever specified that she's not raped. I guess I thought she wasn't because we see that he can't. But
no, he just said it hurt her badly.
You can't have that. He's either a joke or he's a genuine threat. You know what I mean? And the movie, again, well, bounces back and forth.
Let me just say this.
Can't make up its mind.
I completely agree. The whole thing is bullshit.
Yes.
But the thing you're describing,
yes.
I feel like I could apply a lot of that logic to the first movie, too.
Okay.
It's either you either are this or you're that. And the first movie, yeah. I don't know, it plays it both ways. And again, I like the first movie fine. I don't love it.
Yeah.
I see a lot of problems with it.
Yeah.
This movie I do not like, but I don't dislike as much as you do. But I think that might be also based on expectations, meaning like you were expecting this to be a lot better and it's not. And obviously,
you know, we've talked before about, I think maybe it's Tarantino who posits this theory of being in good hands, that you can... You'll go with someone, with a movie, as long as you know that the director knows what he or she is doing.
Sure.
And I feel like maybe I let Kick-Ass get away with some things because I feel like I'm in good hands. And I'm not saying I'm the world's biggest Matthew Vaughn fan.
No, I understand.
I think he knows what he's doing in that movie.
You know that he... I agree that I think that every single beat and every single word is chosen specifically for a reason. He chose it, and he is the master behind everything.
Yeah. And this Wadlow character,
No, he's seen movies.
And he doesn't know. He's seen Kick-Ass and, like, didn't understand it.
And he's, it's the case of a lot of hack directors directing second-tier type movies that they just are. And I want to go back to Jim Carrey for a second, too. Jim Carrey, as much as you want to make fun of a Jim Carrey type because he is eccentric and a goofball and has such an interesting, weird career, he's trying something here.
Yeah.
And he is not in good hands, and I don't know if he's not even trusting Wadlow, because he's doing, like, it's such a horrible, like, the whole arc of his character is so garbage, and you almost get the point halfway through him acting is like he just kind of gave up.
Yeah, well, again, he should be such a better part of such a better movie, because he is doing something, because his character does have this backstory where he was a mob enforcer who became a born-again, and is now... one of the only characters in the movie who seems to stand for something, but is also a bit of a sociopath. I mean, he seems like a leftover from the first movie.
That's way more interesting than any of the other characters.
But then he's taken out of the movie halfway, and it means nothing. I'm not moved by it. I'm not sad by it.
No, the next scene is them in a diner saying, like, oh, we're going to send a card to his sister. Give us $5 for a fucking flower arrangement.
And then it's kind of a joke. We're all supposed to kind of laugh that they're collecting $5 insane. Each. It's like...
I take issue
moved by this?
With a lot of that team. Like Go ahead.
No, because that's one of the things that really bummed me out was the way that they are introduced.
With their origin stories?
Yes.
Yeah.
You cannot. It's like the movie's making fun of that shit. It's a husband and wife who lost their kid and who are so destroyed by that they're like trying to be superheroes to try and find him. And it's kind of played as a joke. And Night Bitch is like, my sister was murdered.
And found in a dumpster.
And so now I'm Night Bitch and here's my tits and I'm going to fuck you in a costume. And I was bullied my whole life because I'm gay and I want to do something about it. It's like, no, these people have real stories and are suffering real pain. Don't make a fucking joke out of it in your shit movie.
Yeah.
All that stuff pissed me off a great deal.
And it really is, aside from Dr. Gravity, Donald Faison, he is just like...
He's fine. He's a goof.
Exactly. Right. He's the... What's the guy's name? His friend. I always forget his name. The Michael Cera's friend.
Clark Duke. Right.
Who thinks he's way funnier than he is. Yes. I mean, he's definitely funny and knows humor and understand, gets the joke, but they need to... Like, he just... Not everything he says is a golden humor nugget.
Right.
There's only a few goofs, and it's him and Donald Faison.
Yeah.
And the rest are ridiculous. And, yeah, I don't know. Even, like, the mom, like, the couple that they lost their son, and they named their crime-fighting duo Remembering Tommy or something.
Yeah.
She has a comical accent.
Right.
Like, everything about them is, like, a goof.
Right.
You're right. It's just, it's silly, and it's...
It's insulting. And
it's not interesting, too. I think that's the big... I sound totally... But let's go back. This is a fucking movie. Who cares about the moral implications, whatever? It's not interesting. If it was interesting, you forgive it a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not even interesting. It's
because
like
everything's sort of tossed off with two lines of dialogue.
I'm bored by this, and right. I don't care about these characters. I don't care if the... There was one maybe kind of funny thing where they couldn't show up to one of the things because they had Book of Mormon tickets, which was a very small little line that was a chuckle.
Right. And in this movie, you're desperate for those. So you're like, hey, good job with that almost joke. I also took issue, and this is just, this I admit is a problem with me. I'm not saying this is the movie's fault, and this is a nitpick, because I do think essentially everything in this movie was bad, except for like Jim Carrey tries, Chloe Grace Moretz tries, and almost has an arc, and I thought what she has to say at the end is sort of interesting. Where he says, you're a hero, you saved the city. And she said, yeah, but I also killed 16 people.
Right.
And
no, I killed cops with a or I killed people with a cop's gun.
Right. Like, right. They're not going to let a vigilante get a free pass. And like, yeah, she's a vigilante. The movie actually recognized it for a second. And there's one other line where they say, where someone points out to her that, like, Nicolas Cage robbed her childhood from her. And that's true. And again, that's what's interesting about the first movie is that he's turning her into kind of this sociopath, and he's fucking her up. And what he's doing is wrong. It's not cool. And
no, in this movie, it's cool.
In this movie, she's the fucking hero. She stands for everything that's good.
I'm Hit Girl. It's who I am. And right. Like, I'm grown up. One thing she says...
That it's a fucking choice. But it wasn't.
Foster father.
It wasn't a fucking choice.
The partner of Nick Cage, who's taking care of her, Morris Chestnut, who is dreamy, and I want to swim all up in him. She makes a comment. She's like, I'm not a little girl. I never have been. And it's like that in a different world that breaks your heart. And it makes you want to be like, oh my God, you're so damaged. But in this one, it's like, fuck you. Yeah. How cool. I'm going to
get back to being Hit Girl.
Peel away on my motorcycle.
Awesome. Right. And it's not supposed to be awesome. Being Hit Girl is not awesome. Like, it's fucked up. Anyway, what the fuck was I talking about?
I don't know. Was that scene in the bedroom where she sees the J Town or whatever? Was that supposed to be her reacting to the boys?
Yeah. Like her first stirrings of adolescent crush.
Okay. First of all, that scene, I fucking hate the whole subplot of like the
every line of their dialogue was like this pseudo Heather's horrible
Diablo Cody
shit.
Type stuff.
Oh God, it was atrocious.
And it's a very, like, they were just borrowing this from Mean Girls and they have the little click and they're bringing the girl and blah, blah, blah.
To what end?
Right. Exactly.
Except to teach her that she doesn't fit in.
Which she already knew, whatever. So they show like an O-Town type thing, and she has, I don't know what was happening.
I think that was supposed to be her. She was all like, loom. I think that was supposed to be her. Oh, my nitpick, that's what I was talking about. That I recognize this is just with me, so I'm nitpicking the movie. But I took issue with how mean-spirited some of the violence was towards the cops. I felt like at some point, if you're going to deal with this movie that's about real heroism and what it really means to be a hero, because that's what this movie's about, not sociopaths. This is a movie about people who really believe themselves to be heroes. And again, I feel like the first Kick-Ass was more about sociopaths. That you have to show
cops
as heroes at
Keystone Cops?
Right, and not just mowed down by machine guns or fucking lawnmowers crashing through their windshield and ripping them to shreds with CGI blood, by the way. This movie is wall-to-wall CGI blood. I just felt like at some point, show cops as heroes. If that's what your movie is about, what it means to really be a hero, and Donald Faison chases down a purse snatcher at the end, and we're supposed to be like, oh, now he's a real hero. Like, how about these fucking guys who put on uniforms and get in the harm's way every day?
Well, I think the movie also is schizophrenic because it doesn't know what to do with that, meaning that are cops the heroes, or are they in the post-Obama NSA era? Like, there's one scene in which they arrest every person in a mask,
right.
Be they the heroes, be they Kick-Ass's crew, or the
which, by the way, they're right to do.
Well, exactly. But now there's a whole, very quickly, I'm more sensitive to this because I'm really bothered by the NSA stuff. That's just my little personal political aside. But very quickly, Kick-Ass's character, it's a lot of like shit voiceover to fill in holes.
Yes,
and stuff.
Tons of that.
And he says, like, we don't know if that night was right. You know, it just was kind of like this very ambiguous about how they arrested people and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, so are the police now, like, when the sergeant who does the briefing is like, who fucking cares? Arrest them all. When Morris Chestnut's
right,
like,
right.
Well, what about them? They're
right.
Community service. Like, fuck them. Okay, so are the cops now, like, what are the cops? Right, I just think they're schizophrenic. They don't know. So when they do show the cops, like, responding to, you know, NYPD in a suburban home in Connecticut, excuse me, that they are, like, literally, like, one guy pulls a shotgun and is like, and then destroyed
all
by
Lily Kaufman and Terra Firma.
They all get destroyed by a CGI Russian woman. I mean, she's definitely not CGI, but where does this woman come from?
Yeah.
Like, that is a casting coup.
Yeah.
That's crazy that they found a woman who is taller than everyone and like a Bridget Nielsen. Yeah.
And it says something, too, I think about, and again, part of the problem is, you know, the way that they have to show that she's formidable and that she's evil is by having her just wholesale murder a ton of cops. And I just take issue with that. Again, that's personal.
$50,000 a week. She earns all the money.
Oh, my God. Every single fucking thing in this movie.
Well, even, what's his name? That drugs are quick. What's his name?
Leguizamo.
He's in this, right?
Yeah. And he's like
an interesting character that they kill way too soon. Yes. Was he the first one?
No.
Okay. I forget that he wasn't
and
the first one.
His performance, I would say, is sort of half-hearted, but he's sort of a conscience. And he's interesting. And again,
he definitely,
him and Jim Carrey, it's not that when they die, it's like we're affected emotionally, like, oh, no. But it is definitely like, oh, well, there goes one thing the movie had going for it.
Right.
So you're watching.
There goes Ned Stark.
It's just right. And it's weird.
Spoilers for Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were referring to the one dude in the prison in that garbage scene. That's a Game of Thrones guy.
Oh, yeah. God. He does a bad.
No, come on. That was a great scene. That was the Leguizamo scene.
Accent. Right.
And what came of that?
Khaleesi's guard.
Yeah.
What's his name?
When I don't know. I don't know anyone's name on that show. when motherfucker
Jor-El
like,
is his name.
When the motherfucker is like, you taught me everything I need to know. He doesn't actually apply any of that.
No.
And nothing comes of that scene. No. Nothing comes of any scene. No scene informs any. Going back to the Russian chicken, you can make your point. I thought it was telling.
I have no points!
Again, this is supposed to be the story of Kick-Ass and the motherfucker, right? That one's the main character, because the movie's fucking named after him, and then the motherfucker is the main villain. And by the time we get to the end, when there's this big battle,
Motherfucker's capable of fighting? That I had an issue with that, too. Like, Kick-Ass is trained, and is better.
Shown,
and
right.
The joke is that motherfucker, right. He has money.
Right.
He cannot fight. And they have an epic fight, which is not epic. It's garbage.
But it's garbage.
That's not your point.
And you don't care about it at all. You're much more interested. You feel like Hit Girl and the Russian Chick, that's the main fight, because they have established themselves as mattering in this garbage movie, and the other two have not.
They're mattering, and the other two are smattering.
I like what you did.
Thank you.
That fucking adrenaline reveal, too, is like...
No, garbage.
This movie sucks.
Do you think the movie, this is going to be...
It's so sloppy. It's like, it's just so sloppy. And again...
No. Because when they first showed the adrenaline, it's in the first 15 minutes where they're in...
I wish they would just pause the movie and be like, remember this for later.
Right, because it literally is in the little dojo of Hit Girls.
And they just call attention to it out of nowhere.
The guy walks... Kick-Ass walks up and he says, what's this? Don't touch that. you might need that later. It's a last resort, or what she says.
Yeah, right, and so you think it's some sort of poison, but it's not, it's adrenaline.
Which, by the way, is poison. No. The only difference between medicine and poison is dosage.
it's just so sloppy, and again, I know a ton of people don't like the first movie. To me, I'm making apologies for the first movie, I like it. The first movie, to me, feels like a high wire act that succeeds. And this movie...
It's definitely a high wire act.
This movie is a baby playing in its own shit. Like, while the first movie walks the tightrope above it, there's a little dumb baby with shit on its head. Exactly. And that's Kick-Ass
Baby Kaufman. Do you think this is going to sound like a really dumb, and maybe I'm not trying to fix Kick-Ass 2? This would not fix it at all.
Yeah.
But in the last scene where there's two armies and like Kick-Ass walks forward and the motherfucker walks forward and they're like, I'm going to make you suffer. I'm going to kick your butt because you're bad and I'm good. Motherfucker should have died, like bullet in the head, died right there.
Yeah.
It would have been so much more interesting for the motherfucker to die before the fight starts.
Yes.
Half of his crew is like, fuck this and leaves. Yes. And then it's just a fight between Mother Russia and Hit Girl.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm fine.
Because otherwise, he falls into a shark tank and dies, except wait till after the credits.
Yeah, make sure you stay till after the credits.
Oh, my God. It's just like, I just love that they're like, hey, Chris, Mince Class, I don't know what we call you, Christopher, Chris, just ad lib with the water and try to get the water, because I guarantee every one of his lines, he is not, I don't think he's a very clever person. But.
And guess what? Don't bother setting up Kick-Ass 3, dumbasses, because Kick-Ass 2 just made sure there's not going to be a Kick-Ass 3, because it's shit.
I hope so, but there's no...
By the way, they couldn't even fucking handle him getting eaten by the sharks. That's so badly handled. You don't see anything? Did they not have a budget?
Like, I think that's why, though. I mean, because it's like they so want to set up badly, that he's alive.
It's handled so badly. It's so poorly done. Like everything in this goddamn movie.
The music, I don't even say it was awful. There was one scene where she's driving, and it was like the most, like, royalty-free stock music. Everything.
Well, at one point they use a Joan Jett song, because the first movie, you know, has a bad reputation during one of the more memorable fight scenes. It's her in the hallway, and they're playing Bad Reputation, and it's like, yeah, that's awesome. So this one, it's like, hey, remember the last, we had a Joan Jett song, so we're going to play this weird, sped-up, I Hate Myself for Loving You, while she tries to get home Ferris Bueller style before her foster father.
I take issue with anything post 2007 that uses I Hate Myself for Loving You, because it is nothing in my head except the NBC Sunday Night Football theme song sung by...
I waited all week for Sunday Night?
Yeah, it's the same, like, hey Jack, it's a fact, Sunday nights... It's like the Bears and the Packers.
Great night for football. Friday night football.
But they really do, like, every week they cater it to the two teams playing. Oh, like, the Bears and the Packers. What a fight. Put on your cleats. Let's charge on the field. Hey, Jack, it's a fact. Sunday. I mean, it's obviously. Perfect. What's her name? What's her? Faith Hill.
Oh, good. Faith Hill singing. She's got the edge of Joan Jett.
No, you want when I'm sitting down with my refreshing adult beverage to watch a football game where men in pads destroy each other.
Yeah.
Faith Hill singing a Joan Jett song, but catered to my Bears.
In closing, I would just like to say, in a summer of bad movies that have disappointed me, and when I saw that guy Chris at Comic-Con, he had said, like, yeah, I feel like you've gotten way more negative, like, since I started listening. And that may be true, but I said, this summer has done that to me. Like, movies have gotten worse. It's not me.
But I think the joke's on our audience. I've known you for 20-some years. You've never been positive.
Not about life, but I try to be positive about movies.
Yeah, I guess.
I wanted to find good things to say about Kick-Ass 2, but I have very little good to say about it.
And even just having this conversation, because we made a point, obviously, we saw it together, we said, let's not...
Yeah, we didn't share any. And I think you could tell that I didn't.
Oh, yeah, of course. And I was
because you have eyes, and you saw that piece of shit.
And my reaction was like, well, some of the fights were okay. Like, I swear to God, that's my takeaway. And it's really just
watch
like...
Watch the first movie again.
Well,
the fights are so much better. So much better.
But here's the thing. I'm at the movies.
In a summer of bad movies, I felt like Kick-Ass 2 was one of the worst that I saw. I don't know. It's not like one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It may not even be one of the worst movies of the year. But I really, really didn't like it.
What are some other worst of the year so far?
Grown Ups 2 would be in there.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't know. Planes was really terrible. So, really, in the last month, I've seen a lot of garbage. But guess what? Next week, The World's End comes out. I haven't seen it, but if it's as good as I hope, I said this to Doug, World's End and Your Next come out in the same weekend. So, it turns out you could have just gone to the movies one weekend for the summer and seen everything that was good. Assuming World's End is good, I haven't seen it.
World's End, I'm nervous about.
Me too.
Because Edgar Wright is great, and Hot Fuzz is great.
Yeah.
It was on TV the other day. I never mean to watch more than a few minutes, and it's like, I'm watching this for an hour. And obviously, Shaun of the Dead is great.
Yeah.
Seeing previews for this movie, I'm a little... I feel like, what's his name? Simon Pegg is playing against... He's picking a new character that a character that I don't like. A character that I can't really relate to.
But I don't remember the Hot Fuzz trailer being great either. And the movie's great.
So. Yeah, no,
Edgar Wright is now in like that Quentin Tarantino category where you keep waiting. Like, I hope this isn't the one that breaks the streak. Yeah. Like, don't let this be the one that fucks it up.
He's definitely good hands. And I look forward to it.
Just but like Jeff Wadlow. I kept calling him Chris Wadlow, well, I think. Jeff Wadlow. I'm sorry, everyone.
Wow, that's your correction.
I kept calling him Chris Wadlow
from the corrections department,
but it just popped into my head, Jeff Wadlow.
So, but watching the previews, to your point, I think that they're really highlighting. It's a preview for non-Edgar Wright fans. It's all like blue alien guts and, you know, and people drinking beer. It's just, it's kind of like, this isn't what we love about these movies.
We don't need all these
special effects. I love how it's riffing on special effects.
Right. But I think that's going to be the next podcast. So everybody go see that. Everybody go see Your Next. Nobody go see Kick-Ass 2.
Negative.
Fuck you, Kick-Ass 2.
Fuck you in the dick.